The Clearing by Nick Bogdanovich. Chapter 1. The Night of the Snake. He heard something moving behind his head, rustling on the floor of the tent. Instinctively, he knew it was a snake. His body immediately froze. The forest was full of snakes of all sorts and sizes. Not all of them were poisonous. Not all were deadly. He waited. Seconds later, he felt the cold scales of the reptile slide slowly over his naked shoulder. He was sick with fear, but he did not move. He forced himself to remain perfectly still. By its weight, he knew that the snake was a big one. As it slid across his shoulder and onto his chest, the weight increased. It was at least a meter long, and still it kept coming. There was no light in the tent, but from time to time the moon emerged briefly from the clouds above, and a kind of half-light flooded the tent. That happened now. Out of the corner of his eye, the man glimpsed the triangular markings on the tail of the snake as it crossed his shoulders and disappeared into the sleeping bag where he lay. What he had seen froze his blood. The snake was Fur de Lance, one of the most aggressive and deadly vipers in the forest. In his life, the man had seen many of them. He remembered the first one he saw when he was still a child. The snake had attacked a small dog with amazing speed and ferocity. The impact had sent the animal flying through the air. It was dead before it hit the ground. Now the man felt the snake coiling and settling on his stomach. In late August, even at the equator, the nights can be cold. The man knew that the snake was looking for no more than a warm place to spend the night. The heat of his body had attracted it. But he knew too that if he made the least movement, if he moved so much as a muscle, the snake would react instantly by sinking its long yellow fangs into his flesh. He must force himself to be completely motionless, and he must remain totally alert, more alert than he had ever been in his life. His mind must be as clear as crystal. If he made the slightest involuntary movement, he would be dead within 2 minutes. He told himself again that he must control every muscle of his body, be utterly still. Thoughts and fears rushed into his mind, but he forced himself to control them, to put them into order. How long would he have to wait? Until the morning, of course. Until the Yankee woke and came to see why he wasn't up. Now the Yankee was his only hope. It must be 11 now, the man thought. The sun rises at 6. 7 hours. He would have to wait 7 hours. Then the Yankee would come. Consciously, he stilled his mind, slowed his breathing, calmed his fears and the beating of his heart. He had the knowledge and the discipline to achieve complete stillness. He would do the only thing he could do. He would wait. The man's name was Antonio, half Portuguese, half Yakugo Indian. He was 38 years old and powerfully built. He had spent all his life in the Amazon rainforest, and there was little he didn't know about it or about the animals and plants that flourished there. The Yankee had hired him as a guide. For 3 weeks they had been travelling overland in the thick forest, where trees were often 30 metres high or more, and where, even in the middle of the day, only a kind of twilight filtered down to the forest floor. Every so often the Yankee took measurements with the compact, sophisticated equipment he carried. Antonio did not understand what the Yankee was doing, of course, but he suspected that he was plotting the path of a future road. Perhaps he worked for an oil or a logging company. When Antonio asked him directly, the other replied with typical Yankee arrogance, "You wouldn't understand, buddy. It's a bit too complicated for you. You need an education to understand this stuff." But Antonio understood only too well what a road would mean in this unspoiled country. A road would mean trucks and machinery and pollution. Eventually, it would bring settlers who would burn the forest to clear land to grow soya beans. They would spray their crops with insecticides, fungicides, and herbicides. They would hunt the animals and birds to extinction. Experience showed that in this country, roads meant death. With these thoughts in mind, Antonio had been tempted to leave the Yankee to fend for himself in the jungle. Now, with the snake coiled and sleeping on his belly, he reflected that it was just as well that he hadn't. Only the Yankee could save him now. They had come to the clearing 2 hours before sunset, made a fire and put up their small individual tents on opposite sides of it. Not 10 meters away, the Yankee was snoring peacefully in his sleep. How much time had passed? How long had the snake been there? An hour, perhaps? 6 hours to go. Chapter 2. The Lump. Herbert Langston Robertson, Herbie to his friends, woke just before dawn. Lying in his warm sleeping bag, he felt good. He felt particularly satisfied that for once he had not been shaken awake by that damned half-breed he had hired as a guide. Usually, the first things Herbie saw when he woke were Antonio's narrow, expressionless eyes staring into his own. The experience never failed to frighten him. Then he would hear the half-breed's voice, "Time to rise." Those three words would constitute most of the day's conversation, for Antonio was not one to waste his breath on idle speech. From time to time, he would bark an order, "Don't touch that. Stay here. Follow me." But otherwise, the two men hardly spoke. Behind the guide's habitual silence, Herbie sensed a deep well of hostility. The fact was, however, that Herbie didn't like Antonio very much either. The man was sullen and insubordinate, and he did little to try to hide how much he despised the American. In normal circumstances, Herbie would have fired him on the spot. The only problem was that deep in the jungle, Herbie needed Antonio a lot more than Antonio needed him. Both men were well aware that without a guide, the American would never get out of the rainforest alive. As the first light of day appeared, Herbie unzipped his sleeping bag and crawled out of the tent on his hands and knees. The fire there had lit the previous evening was still smouldering. He began to gather twigs and branches to boil water for his morning coffee. He came from Houston, Texas, so neither his mind nor his body could function correctly without at least 2 cups of strong coffee. As he blew on the ashes to revive the fire, he thought, "Antonio should be doing this. This is his job, not mine." He listened to the 1,000 sounds of the jungle waking. Where was the half-breed anyway? Angrily, Herbie strode across to the guide's tent, knelt down and shoved his head and shoulders inside. "Hey, look here," he started to say. But immediately he stopped. Even in the half-light of the tent, he could see that something was wrong, terribly wrong. Antonio was in his sleeping bag, but he wasn't asleep. Although his body was utterly motionless, his eyes were wide open and staring intently at the American. It was as if he was trying to communicate something, some urgent message with his eyes. Then Herbie saw the large lump in the centre of the sleeping bag on Antonio's stomach. At once he understood. "God almighty," he thought, "there's a snake in the bag with him." For almost a minute, Herbie was as still as Antonio, petrified with fear. Then he began to think. He understood that the guide couldn't move, couldn't speak. The slightest contraction of his stomach would alarm the serpent. Herbie saw that one of Antonio's arms lay outside the sleeping bag. The other was inside. "Oh my God," he thought. "His left hand must be touching it. He can't even move his fingers. How long has he been like that? How much longer can he remain without moving?" Herbie knew that he had to do something. He had to do something right now, but what? Gently, very, very gently, he backed out of the tent. A few moments later, just as gently, he returned, crawling on his belly. He had Antonio's hunting rifle in his hands. But even as he aimed it, at the large lump in the middle of the sleeping bag. He knew his idea was hopeless. Where was the snake's head? Where was its tail? What would happen if the first shot didn't kill it? Herbie lifted his head to look at Antonio. The guide's eyes were blazing with an unmistakable message. No, 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 don't do that. Don't do it. Slowly, Herbie set down the rifle. Then he crawled backwards out of the tent. Once outside, he moved quickly away from the tent. His heart was beating wildly. He was unable to breathe. He had to control himself. Although the morning was cool, he noticed that his face and shirt were drenched with sweat. Chapter 3. Another bad idea. 5 minutes later, Antonio heard the crackling of branches burning. The Yankee was building up the fire. But what on earth for? Antonio waited. Shortly afterwards, he heard the sound of a knife being sharpened against a stone. What on earth was this stupid Yankee thinking of? Eventually, the American crawled back into the tent, this time carrying a machete. Making signs with his hands, he tried to explain to Antonio what he intended to do. But Antonio could make no sense of the American's signs. He had no idea what the other man was trying to communicate. All that he could see was that the American's plan was a complicated one, which meant that it was a necessarily bad one. For Antonio knew what the American had to do, and it was simple, so simple. If only Antonio could speak, if only he could tell the American what to do. But he didn't even dare to whisper. Antonio knew, of course, that snakes are totally deaf, but he knew also that they can sense the slightest vibrations of the air. Anything he said would resonate in his chest, and the snake would feel it. Similarly, he didn't dare either to use his right hand, which lay outside the sleeping bag, to signal to the American. If he moved his hand, muscles would inevitably move in his arm, in his shoulder, in his chest. All he could do was try to tell the American by the intensity of his gaze that his idea, whatever it was completely stupid. This idiot was going to get him killed. But it was no good. One thing that Antonio had learned about the American was that he was as stubborn as a mule. Once he had fixed on an idea, he would not let go of it easily. The guide slowly closed his eyes, resigning himself. Meanwhile, Herbie, with infinite care, lifted one corner of the sleeping bag near Antonio's feet. When it was only a few centimetres off the ground, he began to cut the material of the sleeping bag with a large knife. It was not an easy task. His hand moved in a sawing motion, forward and back, but so slowly, so carefully, that it seemed hardly to be moving at all. It took him more than half an hour to make a small flat opening in the corner of the bag, about 10 centimetres wide. So far so good, Herbie thought, as he crawled slowly backwards out of the tent. Now for the hard part. When he returned about 5 minutes later, he was carrying a large black plastic bag. The bag was swollen, as though someone had half inflated it with air. But the smell told Antonio that the bag was full, not of air, but of smoke. Slowly, meticulously, noiselessly, Herbie separated the folds of the sleeping bag where he had cut the opening a few minutes before. He held the folds apart so that they formed a small round hole. Then, just as carefully, he brought the neck of the plastic bag against the hole. Releasing his grip on the neck of the bag, he allowed the smoke to escape from it into the sleeping bag. His plan was working, but it was painfully slow. Pressing against the plastic bag with his knees, he forced the rest of the smoke into the sleeping bag. By now, of course, Antonio understood the Yankee's plan, and its stupidity made his heart sink. For one thing, it would take hours to smoke the snake out of the sleeping bag. For another, there was a constant danger that a sudden movement would wake the serpent. And even if the plan worked, which was impossible, even if the snake was driven out of the sleeping bag, it would immediately see the Yankee. But it would not be the Yankee it would attack. it would sink its fangs into Antonio, into his neck or his face. He felt sick, disgusted. But what disgusted him most, what sickened him most, was that the solution was so simple. How could he make this idiot Yankee understand? All night long he had fought against his fear, against sleep, against cramps. All night long he had waited for the American to arrive and save him. And all for this, to watch him coming and going with bags of smoke. Chapter 4. The Bond. Herbie could see the scorn in the half-breed's eyes, but he didn't know what else to do. 4 times he emptied bagfuls of smoke into the sleeping bag, each time gently placing a small stone over the opening he had made to prevent the smoke from filtering back out. After the 4th bag, he noticed with satisfaction that small wisps of smoke were beginning to emerge from the top of the bag. Then he noticed something that pleased him a great deal less. Tears were beginning to flow from Antonio's eyes, irritated by the smoke. Suddenly the American realized the folly of what he was doing. "My God," he thought, "what will happen if the smoke makes him cough? What will happen if he sneezes?" At exactly that moment, the snake moved. Once, twice, the lump in the middle of the sleeping bag changed form. Quickly but noiselessly, Herbie, his heart pounding, picked up the rifle from the floor of the tent, where he had left it earlier. He aimed at the top of the sleeping bag. Antonio closed his eyes in dismay. He felt the snake moving heavily, lethargically, across his chest. Then it settled down again, having found a new position where the smoke no longer bothered it. Antonio felt its head nestling under his left armpit. He opened his eyes again. Herbie was still aiming the gun at the same spot, several inches from Antonio's head. Antonio thought, "If the snake doesn't kill me, this damned Yankee probably will." For 15 minutes, absolutely nothing happened. Finally, realizing that the snake wasn't going to move again, Herbie lowered the weapon. Now what was he going to do? He felt utterly exhausted. He was lost, scared, confused. He realized that he needed the half-breed to help him. The 2 men looked at each other, their eyes full of desperation and weariness and need. For the first time, there was a bond between them. Now Antonio, too, realized that if he wanted to live, he would have to do something. Concentrating all the willpower and energy he had left, he moved the index finger of his right hand. The hand itself did not move, only the finger. The movement was so slight as to be almost imperceptible, but in the tense stillness of the tent, the American noticed it immediately. He watched the guide's finger with fascination. He had not the least doubt that Antonio was trying to tell him something. "What does it mean?" he thought. "What does he want me to do?" The finger continued to make its minute movements, but still the American couldn't understand. Antonio was trying to draw something. He was trying to make a picture in the air. Clearly, he didn't want his finger to scratch against the hard floor of the tent for fear of alarming the snake. But Herbie still couldn't see what Antonio wanted him to see. Then he had an idea. Holding up both hands to tell Antonio to wait, he again backed cautiously out of the tent. How many times that morning had he crawled into and out of the tent? Antonio watched him leave. Had the American finally understood what he must do? No, obviously not, for Herbie was coming back again. This time he entered the tent holding a jar of instant coffee. Now it was Antonio's turn to be intrigued. The American scattered the dry, brown powder softly against Antonio's hand. At last, Antonio thought, he has finally done something intelligent. The guide began to move his index finger as before, clumsily drawing a small circle in the coffee powder. Herbie watched intently. Yes, there was no doubt, it was definitely a circle. And now the guide, with infinite care, was adding small, short marks around the circle. Then the finger stopped moving. The drawing was complete. Herbie thought hard. a circle with short lines radiating from it. What on earth? Then he suddenly realised. Of course, he thought, of course, what a fool I've been. Nodding his head vigorously, Herbie pointed up to the sky to show Antonio that at last he had understood. The sun. He must use the sun. Chapter 5. A Death. Working with the utmost caution, Herbie began to take down the tent. He knew that if the canvas, or a part of the aluminium frame, accidentally fell on the sleeping bag, the result would be disastrous. Moving softly in the bright light of the clearing, he took more than half an hour to dismantle the tent. But finally, he had removed the frame and all the pegs and lowered the canvas on top of Antonio. Now, all that remained was to roll up the canvas centimetre by centimetre without a single sudden movement, until at last Antonio's sleeping bag was exposed. An eternity later, Herbie managed to remove the tent completely. The sleeping bag now lay in the centre of the clearing. The sun, already high in the morning sky, beat down on it. All they had to do was wait. Picking up the rifle, Herbie moved several metres away, his eyes fixed on the lump in the middle of the sleeping bag. He was no longer afraid, but he was angry with himself. He should have remembered that snakes are cold-blooded animals. The temperature of their bodies is not constant like ours, but depends on their surroundings. It is impossible for a snake to remain motionless in the sun for very long, for its body would heat like an iron bar. That's why, during the daytime, snakes seek shelter under stones, in bushes, anywhere cool. So, sooner or later, the heat of the sun falling on the sleeping bag would drive the serpent out. That was certain. Antonio had closed his eyes against the light. Sweat trickled down his face. Apart from that, he lay as still as a dead man. Every so often, Herbie stole a glance at his watch. 10 o'clock, 10:30, 10:40. At exactly 10:45, the lump began to move. With a mixture of horror and fascination, the American stared at the sleeping bag, which was changing shape as a snake uncoiled inside it. The snake's head, a large swollen triangle, emerged from the bag, its forked tongue sensing the air. The animal seemed to hesitate briefly, then moved forward again. Its enormous body, writhing this way and that, brushed repeatedly against Antonio's cheek. Still, the guide lay perfectly motionless. Herbie stared as the snake headed towards the bushes at the edge of the clearing. It was now about 4 metres from Antonio's head. 5 metres, 6 metres. Herbie lifted the rifle to his shoulder and fired. He fired again. The body of the snake exploded. For a fraction of a second, there was total silence. Then the air was full of the cries of monkeys and of the sounds of thousands of birds taking flight from the treetops. The American sank to his knees with relief. It was a long time before Antonio was able to move freely again. His body had been completely rigid for more than 12 hours, and his limbs were as stiff as planks. He suffered from terrible cramps. The American massaged the guide's legs and back. He brought him food and water. The two men drank coffee and smoked. For the first time, they talked and laughed together. Both knew that because of the experience they had shared, there was now a bond between them. Yet each recognised the difference of the other. "There is one thing I cannot understand," Antonio said. "The snake was going back to the forest and was no longer a threat to us. And in any case, it had never intended to harm us. It was merely following its nature. Why did you kill it?" Herbie was puzzled. "I don't know," he admitted finally. The fact was, he had never considered the possibility of not killing the snake. Antonio nodded, but said nothing. Perhaps the American, too, had merely been following his nature. They sat in silence for a while. Then, although it had no relevance to their conversation, Antonio said, "According to the old people, the Amazon River is also a great serpent. Its head is buried in the Atlantic. Its body twists and winds for thousands of kilometres through the forest, and its tail is lost in the clouds of the Andes. They decided to remain in the clearing one more night and move on in the morning.